Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Okay, welcome back, team. Todd Doherty with the Manage Me podcast. And as you have heard, season three is all about interviewing coaches. Selfishly, it's a little bit for me to learn. Positively, it's about the coaches getting exposure and telling their story about their journey and their expertise. And then ideally, you as listeners also hear something that's informative, something that helps you, and maybe you connect with a coach that helps you and helps your journey. So super excited to have Teresa Ward here, Teresa M. Ward. She is a culture and communications champion. She is a training and training and facilitation expert, and she's driving organizational effectiveness through structure, story, and soul, which I love. So welcome to the podcast, Teresa. And tell us about yourself. What is your journey? What did I miss in that intro?
Thanks for the introduction. I'm happy to be here, Todd. It's great to be having another conversation with you. What did you miss? I liked the intro. I like the succinct part. You know, I think we'll probably get into good stories over the next few minutes. Culture and communications consultant is like my tagline of the moment. Of course, that's evolved several times over the last few years. I came up in the corporate space. I worked at both startups and big Fortune 100 companies. And then went out on my own about 5 years ago. Fiery Feather, my firm, will have its fifth birthday in February. And the last 5 years has just been kind of exploring where is the intersection of my value, my skills, my talents, my passions with what the world needs. And it's been a really fun and interesting journey. A couple of years ago, I was marketing myself as a productivity consultant. And during the pandemic and all of the burnout and all of the quiet quitting and the great resignation and some of those really deep and traumatic challenges that individuals and teams and businesses have been going through, nobody wants to talk about the P word anymore. Nobody wants to talk about productivity. And I totally get it because it has a very factory-like connotation. So let's lean into the human side of it. You know, I'm all about how the soft skills of self-awareness, emotional intelligence, communication, and collaboration can make us productive, but right, in like a really enjoyable and thriving way, not like cog in the machine kind of way.
Absolutely. There's a whole bunch of nuggets in there. So let me pick apart on some of those. So in no particular order, I get it with the productivity word. Like people are like, that sounds like we're micromanaging and we're trying to squeeze every penny out, which frankly is a lot about, you know, things that are happening in some cases. I always think about it as years and years ago, I was a soccer coach to my young daughters, you know, they're like 4, 5, 6. And as coaches, soccer coaches, we went through some training, and the best was actually a British soccer player came over to the States, and he was helping this large soccer organization get coaches trained up. And I was one of those. I didn't grow up playing soccer. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, soccer rules are fairly easy except for offsides and stuff like that. So it's a little different than lacrosse rules, but it was more around, hey, you're teaching young children, and it's not about the win. We don't keep score, although every parent keeps score, and so do the coaches, by the way. But it's more about disguised learning. You want them to love the game. You want to enjoy coming to practice and love and be excited to go on the field and have fun. And here's some tips and tricks on how you use disguised learning. Like kicking the ball, right? And you know, he taught us all about, you know, when you're coaching young children, they don't know where to kick the ball. And I don't mean directionally, like physically foot on the ball. So you describe a face and the eyes and the nose and the mouth, and you teach them, if you kick them in the eyes, it's going to roll forward. You kick them in the nose, you know, you can direct it left to right. Kick them in the mouth, it's going to go up in the air. Anyway, you're disguising this learning, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little bit, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you've shifted from the productivity to more of the culture and the people, but it seems like it's a little bit disguised learning on productivity.
Oh man. Yes. You just threw out so many good nuggets there. So to pick apart and kind of just dive into what you shared, I think the difference with kids, you know, needing learning to be disguised as play, and adults who are voluntarily like signing up to work at an employer with a common goal of being profitable and delivering as many widgets as possible, whatever that is that, you know, as adults, we should all like be on the same page about what is our common goal,
right?
What is our outcome? And so that's why it's excusable, acceptable, or desired in a lot of cases for companies to focus on, like, what's the dollar amount? What's the amount of widgets that we're producing, you know, and what's our profitability and all those kinds of things. But I like adding the element of both play and personal development to the work that you're signing up to do. Yeah. Okay. You know, we're all here to make the widgets or to sell this thing or to, you know, change the world with whatever your mission is. But in the meantime, how do I add, like, you know, this element of like a smiley face soccer ball?
Right.
And how can I just get in the flow? I think disguised learning might be a little bit relevant as adults to that thing where you just get in the flow, and it doesn't really matter if you're in a meeting or you're in a spreadsheet or you're in a client presentation. Can you just get fully immersed and fully interested in whatever it is in the moment and not worry so much about what the results are going to look like, what the shareholders are going to hear next quarter? Because that's energy giving. It's life giving. It is that, like, oh, I didn't just drain and give and pour and exhaust all of my energy all day. I was able to be in a moment, in a meeting, in a presentation, in some kind of interaction where I felt filled up. Yeah. And that's when I used to do productivity coaching, quote unquote. I would ask people, well, how do you want to feel at the end of the day? And they would say things like peaceful, accomplished. That's what productivity is. It's this feeling. It's much more qualitative than quantitative, I think.
I totally agree. You know, I'll say his first name because I haven't asked him if I can mention his last name, but I had a one of the best bosses in my career, Jeff. He taught me so much, but he was also one of the hardest bosses I ever had. Mm-hmm. And he really lived the play hard, work hard in that order many times, kind of philosophy. Mm-hmm. And so same guy would, on a Wednesday afternoon, I have to look up, this might be in one of my earlier podcasts, but sorry if it's redundant, but he'd be in the office and he'd say, hey, what do you got going on this afternoon? I'm like, well, I got this meeting, I got this deliverable. He's like, hey, we're going golfing. Okay, you're the boss and let's go. Yeah. He was an awesome golfer. I'm sure he still is. I was an okay golfer, never took a lesson in my life. And we'd always get out there and I would enjoy it. And he was like the older brother I never had. He would pester me and push me and he would force me, quote unquote, to bet, you know, on this game of golf, which I knew I was going to lose. Like but the same guy Thursday morning would be like, hey, where's this? And where's this? And what's the status on this? And I'm like, whoa, we were just on the golf course like all day yesterday. What happened here? But it ebbed and flowed and it worked. It just worked.
So it sounds like he could turn it on and off pretty. I mean, that's what's been really hard during the pandemic is like those lines don't feel as compartmentalized, right? Or as separate. We're on the golf course, we're just playing now versus, oh, we're in the office, we're at a meeting and now we're all business.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're all just in sweatpants all the time. And we're all just in each other's like virtual offices and bedrooms and closets and laundry rooms all the time. So I think that's really interesting. It sounds like he was at least a very relationship oriented person.
Oh, absolutely.
Where he saw that like quality time with you as probably a strategic investment. Yeah. And it sounds like he knew what would motivate you to stay engaged as an employee. And that wouldn't work for everybody, but it worked. It sounds like it worked for you. You guys found this common ground. You had a common hobby. And maybe he could see something that, you know, you couldn't even see at that point, right? He could see when you were getting stressed out. He could see when you needed a break. So it sounds like, yeah, he was probably really tuned in. I wonder if he customize those kinds of things with all employees, or was it like everybody goes golfing with Jeff?
That's a great question. I mean, this whole episode could turn out to be a Jeff episode. Maybe I should have a Jeff episode, but because he was literally one of the best bosses I've ever had. And you're right. He knew how to push really hard personally and professionally. But he knew when to back off. He knew like he was definitely a relationship person. And I guess I'm kind of bringing that up because of the, you know, the culture and how you communicate and being a champion of someone and, you know, all that. And, you know, this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say how old I was, but I was young. I was new in my career, and he took a lot of risks on me.
Yeah,
to do that as well. And
I would say the best boss I had was very similar in a lot of ways that you just mentioned. He pushed me very hard because I think he wanted me to know where my own limits were, and did I even have them, or did I know where my limits were unless I was pushed to hit that edge or to stretch my boundaries out of my comfort zone. He also just no questions asked if I needed to take personal time, do something that was prioritizing my family. You know, he would hang up with any other executive that he was on the phone with if you showed up in his office and looked upset. You know,
you just, it was that look. Yeah.
And constantly not only took risks on some of his more junior and less experienced employees, but would just give the credit away. Just, oh, this wasn't me. This was Teresa.
Yeah.
And whether I deserved it or not, which taught me, I think, to be a generous person and that you don't have to take the credit. You don't have to hoard and try and gather power that way. You're just gonna get all the marbles if you give them away.
Absolutely. Two last things. And then I wanna hear more about your journey. I wanna hear about how you came to coaching and all that stuff. So last two things. One is I love presenting. I've been in front of groups of one like this. Mm-hmm. I've been groups of, you know, 5,000 people in the room, 5,000 people on video conference. And I'm not, listen, my daughters asked me one time, like, don't you get nervous? I'm like, oh yeah, oh, absolutely. But it's an exciting
nervous.
It's not like I can't do this. I need to run out the back door. Mm-hmm. It's never been like that. And I never thought about it until just now, but I think that seed was planted when Jeff used to stick me up in front of clients oh gosh, I hope he doesn't figure out who he is. I'm sure he knows exactly if he's listening to this podcast, and it's great. I would be, if you think about this situation back in the day when you were in the meeting rooms, right? And I was up at the whiteboard presenting, all the clients were looking at me, and Jeff would sit at the very last seat. So the clients were not looking at him.
Yeah, but he was
looking at me.
Yeah.
And he would, I'm just going to say, do all sorts of funny gestures and things that would literally throw me off. Like I would be looking at the screen. I'd turn around to the clients and start talking. I would see him doing
just, I'll say it, inappropriate things. But that made me listen the first couple of times. I'm sure my facial expression, because I have no poker face, was like, what are you doing? But after a couple of times, I actually grew to expect it. I actually, it in a weird way made me like less nervous about the content and is this, you know, am I delivering it properly? And it just kind of started to flow easier. So that's kind of item number one. And then two was, I moved from Connecticut to Charlotte. This was when I was based in Charlotte and we lived in Charlotte. Now he definitely knows who he is. And everyone listening knows exactly who this is, but everyone who knows me knows exactly who this is. And my wife was 8.5 months pregnant. And this was my last trip to Atlanta. I promise, honey. And then no more trips. And we're in Atlanta, Jeff and I, with a customer, and we're having lunch. And this is back in the day, you had pagers, not cell phones.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And, you know, beep, 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 911. Like, wow, that's, that's interesting. And then beep, 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 911. And oh, I had the look. And he threw me the rental car keys and said, go.
Oh,
he didn't ask.
Yeah.
He didn't mention it. And actually, to this day, I have no idea how he got home, because I drove to the airport, jumped on a flight and went home.
Because your wife was in labor, I'm assuming.
She was. Yeah. Well, she had actually fallen and twisted her ankle. And we didn't have any family. Neighbors had to drive. It was crazy, but she was fine. Baby was fine.
You were needed. Yeah. There was a happy ending.
No more traveling after that. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think what stands out to me about your stories, and a good boss isn't a perfect boss, right? A good leader isn't a perfect leader. There are moments that matter. And it's hard to know sometimes which are those moments that are going to matter. It could be big, it could be small. I think for every story that I could tell about a great boss, I could also tell a horror story about, you know, something that was, you know, whether it's something that was inappropriate or not helpful, or, you know, made me cry that day or whatever, because we're all imperfect humans doing the best we can with the information we have at any given time. I think consistency is a big key there, though. If you can take the things that you know generally work for your people and repeat, so they can lean in, learn that trust, and know, hey, we can't predict everything, but I know that I can lean on Jeff. I know I can lean on so-and-so.
I think another big piece of it is, word just escaped my mind, but as a leader, as that person that people look to, is, you know, bringing down the wall and saying, I don't know everything.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to get things wrong.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. I have a lot of good traits and I have a lot of things to share, but I'm going to make mistakes. And we are going to work through that together. And so many leaders / managers, and I put those in two different camps. That's a whole other podcast. Don't do that. And they're like, well, I can't show weakness. And you're like, well,
it's getting better.
I agree.
I think in the last couple of years, I've seen it get a lot better.
I agree.
And some of that was by choice and some of that was forced, but
some of you had to, because you know what, you know, Friday afternoon, my boss and I were like, okay, everyone's going to go home. Just be 2 weeks. We didn't know. We had no idea that nobody did. Nobody knew how this was going to work. It was just pandemonium. So 5 years ago, you left the corporate world, and was there a, kind of putting you on the spot. So
that's okay.
And you may not know, but was there like a pivotal, like, I need to go do this? Or, you know, what was that decision? Because for a lot of coaches that I talk to, and me personally, it's like, I think, and I've met a couple that were like, here's what happened. And a lot of it, a lot of the stories recently are COVID happened and here's what I had to do about it. But some aren't. Some were like, I was in a situation, this happened, and I knew. I knew I had to go to solve this problem. And I was like, that is awesome. I wish I had it.
Yeah.
How did you discover what you needed to do today?
Oh man. Okay. So, back in 2013, so 9 years ago, I met my partner, Matt, my partner, who is a professional musician. And when we started dating, he used to joke and be like, "Oh, you're in the corporate world. I don't even know how to spell 401k." And he had never like used an Excel spreadsheet or like any of that, right? Because he had a completely different talent and a completely different skill set. But he was so passionate and confident. Like not even like a excitable passion, like just a calm confidence in this is who I am. This is what I was meant to do. I play music. And it doesn't matter. Like 1 month he chose between paying his cell phone bill and taking me out to dinner. That was our first Valentine's Day together.
So you could call him or did you?
We went to dinner.
I'm just kidding.
We went to dinner. Like, so wow. It was such a foreign experience to me because I had come up in, you know, like, well, you go to college and then you get a good job and then you get a promotion and then you just keep climbing and you just sort of like you go, go, go. And I was driven by this value of ambition and accomplishment, like a lot of us were in this, you know, in our generation. So
yeah,
I was so fascinated by somebody who could sacrifice a lot and be so calm and confident and happy and content in doing what they love to do. And I was like asking myself, you know, I started to sort of be like, what is that? What would that even look like for me? And I didn't have an answer. And I didn't like that I didn't have an answer.
Right.
So fast forward a couple years, I knew that it wasn't where I was. It wasn't just sort of like operating
the path that you were on.
Yeah.
Was it paid the bills, but it wasn't.
And I liked elements of it, you know, right. I mean, I love working. I love learning. I love being able to help people. But the industry that I was in, it was kind of like, the people I was working with was like, there's some good people here. But like, I really wanted a personal and passionate connection. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I needed to get space to figure that out. And so I wouldn't recommend this, but I kind of just like jumped ship without having a lot of stability in what I was going towards. I just found that I could do like a part-time consulting gig. It, you know, was enough hours that I could pay the bills, but I wanted the time. I wanted the space. I needed to go explore. I needed to go have conversations with people in different industries. And so that's what I did in 2017. And I had to kind of like, when I told my parents and my coworkers and like people about what I was doing, they were kind of like, "You crazy? You were on the fast track to VP, right?"
Right.
Thank you, Past Teresa, for doing like for being like making this somewhat
brave,
like, bad or risky decision.
Yeah.
And because I liked to work, because I had been ambitious, because I was like hyper organized and type A personality. Like I kind of just knew I was going to be able to figure it out.
Right.
And it was just awesome. Through a lot of exploration, a lot of trial and error, a lot of asking my friends questions like, "Hey, do you have any projects you need me to work on? Is there anything that I can help you with?" And people piecing together, "Well, could you do this? Could you do that?" And I started off with that really annoying phrase of like, "Well, I could do anything you want. You know, right. I can. Sure, you want me to be a project manager? You want me to help you with new employee onboarding?" I kind of said yes to everything for about a year. And I was very scattered and very unorganized. And when people would ask me, "Well, what do you do?" I could not answer the question. But eventually I started to find patterns. I started to find themes. Clients, friends, people I was working with kind of kept saying the same things over and over again. And then it started to, you know, you just start to chisel it, right? You start to fine tune and tweak and adjust. And then all of a sudden you're like, "Oh yeah, this is my sweet spot. These are the things I'm going to say yes to." And then of course the scary part is saying no to everything else, but
That totally I rambled makes for sense. A second.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Totally makes sense. And there is no, you know, quote unquote, canned answer to this. Like some people are like, you know, "I always knew I wanted to do this and I got distracted with, you know, this other job, but I always knew and I came back to it."
Mm.
One coach I talked to was like, you know, "This event happened in my life and I needed to make some personal changes and I needed to figure out something to keep me going. And you know, kind of met a friend and this naturally happened. And 20 years later, you know, I'm making a better living at it than I know I would have if I made, you know, vice president at whatever organization. And there's just so many different flavors. And that's why I wanted to do this season three, to hear everybody's story, because it's not the same. And it's okay. It's okay that it's not the same. And it's okay to figure it out. And I'm also personally going through that journey. I think I'm narrowing in. So, you know, some of it was luck. You know, I do a lot of coaching throughout the year at the high school that my wife works at. So, you know, the juniors and seniors, we do mock interviews, you know, and so they get a job description, they apply and the resume, and then we go interview and they dress up and they have their cover letter and all that stuff. And I never had that. I don't know how you learn that. Like you just get out into the working world, right? We didn't have the internet to go Google what are the top 7 interview questions. Like we didn't have that.
Yep.
And so I love, well, listen, not every student does this, but you know, the ones that are just sitting there soaking it in and you can see like, oh wow, this is so helpful. And I should put that on my resume. Yeah. And you know, the painful ones are the kids that like they don't have any guidance and they have zero idea what they want to do. And like you can't really help them because you have zero idea, like at all. And then the opposite extreme is there's one girl, one woman, sorry, that I interviewed, and she was like, well, I'm into marketing. And I'm like, oh, tell me more about that. And you know, what's your ideal job? And because I do the mock interview and then we have time and I'm like, okay, here's the real deal. Let me tell you, the real world, right? And she starts telling me, I really want to do digital marketing and I'm going to go to college and I'm going to get that as my major. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Do you kind of dabble with it? She's like, well, not really, but you know, my dad's company, you know, I redesigned their website and I did their marketing campaign on LinkedIn and blah, 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 blah. And my sister has a business. I did this. And then my neighbors, and I'm like,
wow, that's a lot.
Do you realize you already have a company? Like you're getting paid to do this. You don't have a name. You don't have an LLC. And I don't know if you have a business bank account, but all you need is those three things. And you literally do not have to go to college and you can make more money. Like I couldn't say that to her, but I felt like, oh my goodness, you have this figured out and you don't even realize it. Like it's amazing.
That'll be really interesting to see because, you know, we all think, well, not we all, but a lot of us thought we had it all figured out, right? Like where we were going and the universe just laughs, right? When you're like, no, I have my plan and you know, I have all of this. So it sounds though, like what's going to serve her well is just, she sounds like a doer. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like instead of like a wait and see, or I don't know, like it. So whether she ends up in digital marketing or something completely different, sure that authentic part of her is going to serve her.
It's very similar. I totally agree. And it's something honestly I've learned over the last, you know, year and a half or so as I've thought about how do I go about this. And you know, I could read every book, I could, you know, study or analysis paralysis, but the best lesson is just like you did. Just go do something. Just go try it. And you're going to ping pong a little bit and you're going to learn. You go, no, don't like that. Oh, but I really like that. Start, you know, the go experience first step is the learning experience.
I agree. And sometimes it's painful on the other side of it because, you know, you didn't do it perfect. You didn't do it anywhere close to perfect. You know, you completely fell on your face and, and then you learn. I'm so grateful that I now get to spend most of my time doing the things that I feel confident and passionate about. Now I feel aligned with like my drummer partner, as far as like, it doesn't matter if I double my income next year, or if I scale up this business, or if I, you know, get all fives on my, you know, client feedback forms or things like that. I just feel so good about what I'm doing. It feels so in line with what I was created to do. And I was just like giggling to myself the other week because I was thinking about the things that I loved to do as a little kid, which was basically have my little sister sit down and have me like teach her things, right? Like we're gonna play school, and you know, I'm gonna teach you things, and then I'm gonna like organize my little curriculum in the notebook. And I was like 8 years old, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing now? I'm building curriculum, I'm facilitating conversations.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know. That's so cool. You've been planning this your whole entire life. Tell me about Fiery Feathers. Tell me about the name. Is there a story to that? It's a cool name.
Yeah. That's actually another throwback to childhood. I have always been like weirdly obsessed with birds and bird watching.
Okay.
And so I just sort of felt, I never thought I would be an entrepreneur, by the way. When I was in corporate America, I was like, oh, I just want to, you know, have somebody give me a task, and I want to do that task well and then call it a day. But when I started exploring entrepreneurship and being like, well, who am I? What is my brand? I don't know. I just knew I wanted something with birds or feathers. But when you go on Pinterest and you Google like feather logos, everything looked like I was a jewelry designer, nice, or an artist, or it was just all way too, like pun intended, flighty.
Yeah.
And when I asked some of my friends and my colleagues and people who have worked closely with me and known me for a long time, oh, what are some of the, you know, adjectives that you would use to describe my personal brand? Big one that came out was focus. And so I did a little bit of word history and word webbing about focus. And it turns out that focus used to be a word for the hearth in a room, like in an old like stone hut or cottage or something. Like the hearth, the fire, was the focus of the room, which makes total sense because it's the source of light. It's the source of heat. It's where you boil your water. It's where you take your baths. It's like everything.
Right.
So I loved the dichotomy between fire and feather. You've got grounded focus and then this sort of flight, adventure, exploration. I just like slapped that on a website and, you know, paid somebody like $50 to do a logo in 2018. Just this week, I feel, you know, in honor of the 5-year anniversary, just this week, I launched the new Fiery Feather, like more official branding.
And awesome.
And like that. Yeah. So that's out there.
That, that totally makes sense. I mean, I will never think of a fireplace and a hearth ever again the same way, but it does make total sense. And back in the day, you know, no electricity and all stuff, that's where everything happened. That's where stories were told. That's where things were made. That's where, you know, not just dinner, but everything. That's awesome. I love the visual there.
Somebody told me though once that Fiery Feather sounds like a pub in Ireland. And I was like, maybe I'll just keep the URL and just maybe that'll be my, how I retire. I'll just go open a pub in Ireland and I won't have to change the name.
Exactly. And you do some consulting business out the side too.
Sure. Yeah.
It's funny you say, you know, you never thought of yourself as an entrepreneur, but yet here you are, right?
Yeah.
Interesting enough, I always thought of myself as an entrepreneur. I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, small business.
Interesting.
And, you know, I had several small businesses, many actually, since fourth grade. I figured out that I could buy a bag of Blow Pops for $1.25. In the bag was like a 50-cent coupon. So my next bag was even cheaper and I could sell the Blow Pops for a quarter each.
Oh,
I think it was 20 or 25 in the bag, but yeah. I was making like 20, $25 a week, which in like fourth grade was like a lot of money. Until the principal found out and we weren't allowed to chew gum in school because, you know, the Blow Pops had gum.
Oh,
my business was shut down by the man. But anyway, that was the start. And I got hooked on, wow, this is so cool. I love this. And marketing and, you know, all that stuff. And I've had several small businesses. But when I was graduating college, the country was in a recession. Jewelry stores are very lean typically. So high margin, low volume, high end jewelry. And I would have been my grandfather was the third generation, sort of on his way exiting for retirement. My parents were the fourth generation. I would have been the fifth generation. Hmm. And the business just wasn't capable of taking on a whole other generation, you know, paying me and my soon to be wife to do that. So I was like, hey, it's cool. All I know is small business. I'm going to work for a big corporation and just see what it's like.
Yeah.
And like, here we are, you know, you know, decades later.
Well, what's kept you, what has been the pull? Like, what has felt good about working for a big corporation?
I love so much about it. Like, just like you, I love so much about it. You know, some of the people, mm-hmm. not all the people, the cultures and traveling and, you know, all mm-hmm. over the world. And then sometimes too much travel. And then learning and training and education, but that's really fallen off.
You mean them investing in professional development and learning people, opportunities
exactly.
for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fallen off. I think for two reasons. One is that at a certain level, and I don't mean to be arrogant, yep. at a certain level, it's like
you're expected
you need to know everything. Like we're not going to put you in like, you know, communication class, right? Read a book or would you, that's on you.
Sure. Sure.
I also think many, not all, but many companies just have devalued that. And, you know, they're just not investing as much as they used to in people, which is a shame.
Yeah.
And I guess I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit. I've always had like the side gig.
Sure.
Hope is not a strategy, but always hoping like it would just explode and I'd just be able to quit and walk away from my corporate job. And never happened, but that's part of this journey too, is figuring out, you know, okay, what's the next? So, you know, for me, I always think of plan in threes or triads, but
sure, yeah.
I feel like my career is and many people's, but mine particularly is three phases. Mm-hmm. One was the learning phase, you know, college yep. and entry level and just so much training. I had all sorts of fantastic training. And then it's the earning stage, yep. which is stage two, the kind of middle, like I've got a family and I need to make a certain amount of money and growth and investing in college and blah,
yep.
retirement. And then it's okay, you know, kids have graduated college. They are now almost off the books. And now it's, for me, it's turning back and saying, how can I help those who are in their learning and earning stages do even better than I did? Because mm-hmm. I learned along the way and made mistakes and stumbled and all that stuff, like everyone should. Mm-hmm. But if I could help coach individuals and say, hey, let's talk about what you want your career path to be. Let's talk about the good and the bad of all of that. So you're aware, I'm not trying to coach you out of it or tell you something negative, but here's some things that are probably going to come your way that if you're aware of them now, you're just going to breeze on through. You're going to go, oh, here it is. Just like Todd and I talked about, I'm going to navigate around it. Here we go.
I mean, hopefully, right? Hopefully. We didn't listen to anything anybody was telling us when we were, you know.
Very true.
In our teens and 20s, you know, you got to hit your head against the wall a few times. But I think it's, you know, it's fulfilling to be able to share it. I love that you're doing, you know, this podcast where you're recording this kind of stuff. So you aren't just trying to speak this wisdom or this truth to like one person. Right. You can kind of put it out there, hopefully like in one of many scenario. And for your own entrepreneurial spirit, I love the trends that are going on right now. You don't have to choose anymore, right? You don't have to choose. I am either a corporate person or I am an entrepreneur. There's lots of liminal spaces where, you know, the side gig is more accepted than ever. And I think employers are very willing to negotiate flexible schedules and, you know, things that it used to be, well, you're either part-time or you're full-time. And right. Now there's lots of blurred lines there. And I like the customization of a career path or paths, you know, that you can kind of walk simultaneously. So I'm optimistic about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Experiment here with something that might be a passion and find out if it is. I just heard Gary Vayner speak on something very, very similar. He can be polarizing but he's saying, you know, he gets paid big dollars to go speak to big companies about, you know, topics like this. And recently he was talking to a big company and said, you know, one of the challenges I'm hearing from you is that you're having a hard time retaining sort of the millennials and these folks coming in. Remember, mm-hmm. you're competing against all these other things that they could be doing, that, you know, they're seeing their friends make 25, 40, 50, 80, 100, 150, selling things on, you know, Amazon and, you know, TikTok and getting sponsors and all that, you're competing against that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're probably not going to be able to compete head to head, but just remember that in the back of your head. It used to be you sign up, this is your job.
Yeah.
And this is what you do. This is your income. And you don't really have much of another choice until you go to another company. That is now totally
out the window completely.
And it's so many different sources of potential income that it's staggering.
Sources of potential income and sources of potential fulfillment.
Yes.
Right. So where you get your paycheck may or may not be where you get your sense of pride, your sense of purpose, your sense of play, all the good P words there.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to go back just a couple minutes, and you talked about sort of the journey we're all told about, not directly, but by observation. Again, I think that journey is different than when, you know, we were being told it, which was you go to school, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, you buy a house, whatever that journey is. I mean, it may not be exactly that way, but that's sort of what the societal expectations have been. And now it's much different potentially because you have all these other options. And I think that, you know, the fulfillment side doesn't necessarily happen in that first scenario of, you know, what society tells us. Right. Mm. And so I do some coaching, some men's coaching exclusively around this topic with a partner, and he is just awesome at it. And he's like, let's just call what it is. Right. For men, you know, 40, 50 ish years old, sometimes 30, mid 30s, whatever that age is, I can tell you, this is what you did at college, got married, kids, blah, 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 blah. And you bought the house, you bought the car, and you got the promotion, you got the title, VP, SVP, EVP, whatever it is. But you hit this point where you're like, oh, okay, I'm at the top of the hill. This is it? Like, what's next? Like, well, I don't know. And so that what you haven't done is really fulfilled, like you said, your purpose. And it's hard to figure out sometimes what that purpose is. But the best way is to experiment and try this, try that. What did you like? I love your, you know, when I was a kid, I used to sit my sister down and, you know, and you, that, like, you know, I don't know whether you thought of that first or second, but you went back in your mind and said, that's what I enjoyed doing even as a child. And this is so cool that I get to do that now.
Yeah. So just a couple of things in response to what you're sharing. I think there have always been these non-conventional paths.
Yeah.
I think that pre-internet, there was only one of them that was like promoted on TV shows, right? And that was very, you know, okay, you are a man in a suit who goes and works in a skyscraper and, you know, this is the path. David White, who is a poet who writes about corporate America, fascinating. He has a book called The Heart Aroused, and it's all about like bringing your heart and your soul into your work. It's way better than you could ever expect it to be from the description that I just gave. It's so good.
I will try to put that in the notes, but I haven't read it.
He talks about how literally on 9/11. When the towers came down, that was very simultaneous to the crumbling of this like hierarchical path that we had all like worshiped or standardized.
Very true.
So there were always paths of, you know, a single mom having three jobs or, you know, like there has always been fulfillment in blue collar jobs, you know, or, you know, being the barista and all those things that were all of a sudden like, what? This is a new path. No, people have been doing that their whole lives. But I think the internet exposed a lot of that, took down this monolith of, if you look like this and you drive this car and you wear this suit, you have this title, like that is the pinnacle that you're aiming for. So that is one of the few things that I appreciate about like the internet and social media is a lot of the destigmatization of these different paths. You don't have,
Absolutely.
For and all different kinds of people in all different kinds of situations.
Pre-internet, I love the 9/11. I don't love 9/11, but it like really resonates with me, sort of the crumbling of, wait a minute, why we all commuted into the city. We went to these big glass towers to do the job that we could do anywhere. And by the way, I hated that job. By the way, I used to live in Connecticut, and I can't tell you how many of my friends and folks I worked with would get the offer, you know, go work in New York. And, you know, it was a train ride, hour and a half, 2 hour train ride, miserable, just miserable. And yes, you made way more money and all that stuff, but I would in my mind go, okay, you know, Steve's going to go take that job and I'm going to give him 18 months in my brain. And he's going to say, get me out of here. And sure enough, 16, 18 months would come by and he's like, cannot do this anymore.
Yeah.
You can't pay me enough to do this. It's just torture.
Yeah.
But I
think our, you know, the younger generation is like, they've seen that, right? They've heard that from their fathers or their brothers or their, you know, friends or whatever. And they're just saying like, well, why would I even try for that? Right. Which is totally understandable. So it'll be really interesting to see where all of these work trends go. You know, I love following like future of work trends. And for me personally, that's so relevant to the work that I do with teams, because we didn't really say this explicitly, but I feel like it's worth mentioning that I don't really primarily think of myself as a coach because I don't do a ton of one-on-one work.
Sure.
I mostly work with teams. So I'm mostly like,
that's okay.
Effectiveness consultant.
Right.
But that is, you know, something that I'm really passionate about is how do we take like all of these societal and cultural trends and apply them to realistically what's going on with a group of people who are trying to accomplish a goal together. And like, let's just accept the reality and let go of what we think everything should be or should look like. And I think things are, you know, to come full circle, you end up being much more productive that way.
Totally agree. And back to your other answer, you know, why would I do that? Why would I, you know, in this case, take the train to New York. And the answer used to be A, because that's what you're supposed to do. B, because the money, right? But what's more and more I think is happening is like, well, but money doesn't buy me what I, you know, just buy me happiness. Money doesn't, you know, give me purpose. Money doesn't necessarily satisfy me. Now I get it. We all work so we can live. We can put food on the table and put a roof overhead and all that stuff. But at a certain point, not going to put a dollar figure to it, but at a certain point you have all that.
Yep.
And then it's about what else, you know, do I really need a Ferrari or do I, you know, just want to have a car? Or maybe I don't want a car and maybe I want to travel more and be more independent. And, you know, all those options now are way more available and acceptable because people are realizing, you know, probably seeing their parents or whoever just go, know, I did this for 30, 40 years. I retired and now, you know, that's it.
Yeah. and really, I think the people who are having the most struggle with this shift are the older executive leaders who had like, they don't understand because they didn't come up that way.
Right.
And not everyone, but I think, you know, that is where I am grateful for executive coaches who can speak to these leaders with a lot of influence and say like, stop grumbling about like Gen Z and everyone, they're lazy or whatever. Like, no, let's just adapt to the trends of society, accept the reality for what it is, embrace it, innovate, experiment, like you said, and just like, you know, like to come full circle to Jeff, right? Be relationship oriented, form real human connections with as many people as possible. And you will find out, you know, what motivates your team. And it might be a Ferrari still, but you gotta figure that out instead of making the assumptions, right?
Nothing wrong with a Ferrari. Absolutely. if that's your pinnacle and that's what you want, go for it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And those targets can change.
I wanna catch you on not catch you, that sounds negative, like I caught you. But talk to me about your ideal client, who you're, you know, what really, because you do lots of things, like you said.
Yeah.
But what are some, whether they're examples that you've done or you're still searching for that, like what I really want to do, but tell me about the, I don't know if that's the right word, ideal
client. Oh, yeah. Team. Yeah.
Tell me what like really gets you excited to jump out of bed in the morning to go do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. My clients are the best. I am so lucky. I love them all. I really have started to try and lean in to work with like relatively empathetic team leaders.
Okay.
So the team lead who is saying, wow, we have some really tough goals to accomplish this year. We have a lot to do. Everybody's going to have to hustle. Everybody's going to have to work hard. Yeah, we're going to accomplish it. We got to go do it, but we need to do it in a human way.
Right.
So what those team leaders typically come to me and ask is, hey, I know my leadership skills. I also know my shortcomings. I know that I'm really good at marketing, or I'm really good at finances, or I'm really good at engineering. And I can lead my engineering team, or I can lead my marketing team, but I need help in facilitating conversations that once we figured out like our what and our why, I come in and I help teams, like I facilitate conversations on a lot of the how. So for example, I've been doing like retreats this month, right? End of year retreats where facilitate conversations to meaningfully look back and reflect on the last year. What did we accomplish? Where did we come up short? What did we learn? How do we apply that going forward? Because again, to me, it doesn't matter if it is finances or it's engineering or it's marketing. Humans are humans, and we all kind of want to process things in a relatively similar way. We want to feel like we have relationships, like we have mastery over what we're doing. So I love facilitating those kinds of group conversations to make sure all the voices are heard and we're synthesizing some meaning so that we can look forward and say, okay, this is our vision. These are our values. These are our guiding principles. And yes, we have this laundry list of projects and tasks and things that the quote unquote, like higher ups are asking us to do, things that our clients are demanding of us. We can do it. How do we do it? How do we say no and set boundaries? How do we stop being order takers?
That, right? Yeah, that's the key. Yeah.
How do we communicate and collaborate better? I love doing stuff on like different personality types. You know, we talked about Jeff being a relationship-oriented leader. Right. There are task-oriented leaders out there.
Yeah.
How do you collaborate with those different types, not take it personally? How do you send effective emails, effective Slack messages? So it's like that meta, like how you do the work. Those right. are the kinds of workshops and curriculums that I typically do with clients. I love working with both small startup businesses who are like going 100 miles an hour. And I work with a lot of big corporations with a lot of red tape too. Because again, you know, people are people, and we all just have to figure out how to like show up, motivate ourselves, set our own healthy boundaries, right? Take care of our own mental health. And then as much as we can, you know, to support others, interact with others and motivate one another too.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Two things. One is I loved all of that, but there's a piece that jumped out at me, which so many people, so many organizations, so many teams don't do. One of the best organizations that does do this is the military, and they call it an after action review.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what was the mission? What were we supposed to achieve? Did we achieve it?
Yep.
What went well? What didn't go well?
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's not adversarial. It's just, you know, even stuff that went well sometimes didn't go the way we expected it to go well. It went well because it just happened to go that way. But there's always learnings in that.
And I would recommend to any other like coaches who are listening to this, or any other like solopreneurs, do that for yourself, even if it's by yourself.
Yes.
So every Friday night, tells you how exciting my social calendar is, but every Friday night, I do like a reflection on the week, and I jot down, you know, okay, what are my wins? What are my accomplishments? What's my cash flow, right? Like making sure I'm adjusted on all of that. What do I have in progress? What's coming next? And where do I need help? Because I'm, you know, we're trying to do this. I'm trying to do this on my own.
Right.
I can't like see the back of my head. I can't like give myself a haircut. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So where do I need help, and where do I need other like friends and coaches and peers and, you know, old bosses and things like that to come in and support me, because we all have our blind spots, right?
I love that
practice is like chef's kiss.
You know, I consider myself fairly darn organized and efficient and all that. But after talking to you, I'm like, wow, I should really be doing that. Oh, I should be doing that. Oh, wow, I should really add that. So I'm learning as we go here. And I think you have some great, I know you have some great ideas. I've heard just a fraction of them here. And I'm excited because I know there's folks listening right now that are like, oh, I need Fiery Feather. So if there's someone out there that's like, I need Teresa's help, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Probably LinkedIn. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm sure we can link to that in
I will. Show notes. I'll put that in the podcast notes.
Yeah. Yeah. Website or LinkedIn. If you Google Fiery Feather, I think you might get a result that's like from some video game. It's like also a treasure that you can collect in some kind of video game.
Oh, okay. All right.
So there's two of us out there, you know, but you'll probably figure out, you know, the right one.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, couple things. So great to connect with you personally.
Yes.
So great to connect with you professionally. You mentioned, you know, kind of your Friday evening reviews and who can help and all that stuff. I have no idea if I can help you, but now that we're connected, please ever, you know, reach out and I will help any way I can.
Oh, thanks, Todd. That's very generous. I appreciate the generosity mentality. And I mean, I think you do have a ton of energy and a bunch of great ideas to offer to all your listeners and all of your partners, I'm sure. Awesome. So I look forward to more discussions in the future.
Thank you. Yeah, actually true. So I always say this at the very end is let's keep this door cracked open a little bit.
Absolutely.
Because we may want to have another episode in X amount of time and say, okay, so, you know, we had episode one and we learned all about Teresa Ward and Fiery Feather and all that stuff. Let's revisit that and what's changed and what's different. So I always want to leave that door open just a little bit.
Yeah. If one thing is consistent, it's change. So we'll see where 2023 leads us.
Thank you for spending time with me and with the Managing Me podcast. Thank you for sharing your expertise and really appreciate your time and knowledge and sharing with us.
Thanks, Todd.
I want to thank you for listening today. Really appreciate you spending time with me. Hopefully you learned something. I want to remind you that I want to hear from you. So if you have a question or input, remember, go to manageme.godaddysites.com or email me at manageme.podcast@gmail.com. On the website, you'll be able to submit a voice recording, something that you want to hear, something that you want to have on an episode. And I want to hear from you. I want to hear about your topics, your guests, your input, your feedback. Hopefully good, but also bad. Talk to you soon.